Police evict the Occupy Wall Street protesters from Zuccotti Park.
And a judge says, let them back in.
From APM, American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Jeremy Hobson.
And I'm Steve Chiotakis. You're listening to the Midday Update from our website, marketplace.org. Today is Tuesday, November 15th.
Coming up, the latest from Zuccotti Park, which was cleared of protesters at 1 a.m.
Europe's latest tactic to solve the debt crisis. Get those pesky ratings agencies to keep quiet.
And some interesting jobs for NBA players who can't play because of the lockout.
Those stories and more just ahead on the Marketplace Midday Update.
Investing, renting, sending your kid to college? Listen to the Marketplace Money Podcast. Find it on iTunes or at marketplace.org/podcasts.
We're going to start today with a big story that's been unfolding all morning at Zuccotti Park, and that's the site of the original Occupy Wall Street protest. Well, demonstrators were cleared from the park in a surprise raid by police at 1 a.m. New York time.
And later in the morning, a judge told the city to let the protesters back in. Marketplace's Stacey Vanek Smith has been following developments from Lower Manhattan all morning, and she joins us now. Good morning.
Good morning, Jeremy.
So you're at Foley Square, which is a place that the protesters who were in Zuccotti Park have moved to. What's the latest from there?
Well, yes, Zuccotti Park is completely empty now. It's been barricaded off. The police are everywhere in riot gear. A few protesters are still standing outside of the barricades. Many of them have moved here. But I spoke with one of the protesters, Aaron Harnley. He's been at Zuccotti Park since 2 a.m. And he said that the fact that Zuccotti Park was cleared probably won't actually discourage the movement, but might have the opposite effect.
This dramatic, you know, midnight, probably illegal clearing of the park succeeded in giving the movement a lot of we'll let the socialists go by. What it did was it succeeded in giving the movement a lot of attention and some drama. And so I think that will not succeed in ending the movement at all.
So the protesters were kicked out, and there's this judge that has said, no, they have to be allowed back in. Who wins in this situation? Did the protesters win or did the city win?
Well, the protesters are saying that they are winning, that this is reinvigorating the movement. Certainly there has been a loss. A lot of the tents were seized and slashed up by police from reportedly. And a lot of that property, the medical tent, the cook tent, the library, sort of all of the trappings of the tent city that had sprung up in Zuccotti Park have been destroyed. So certainly that is a loss. But the protesters have been insisting all morning that this will just reinvigorate the movement and give it new life.
Marketplace's Stacey Vanek Smith joining us from Foley Square in Manhattan. Thanks, Stacey.
Thanks, Jeremy.
All right, Stacey, Jeremy, we're going to hear now from a protester directly. Chris Porter has been to Occupy protests all across the country and was in New York for the latest skirmish with police. Hey, Chris.
Hello. How are you?
I'm doing well. You've been traveling for thousands of miles there with the Occupy protests. What's going on right now in New York?
What's going on right now is the cops are cleaning out and clearing out Zuccotti Park. They forcefully came in there and completely destroyed our camp, our kitchen, everything is completely wiped out.
What do you mean destroyed? What did they do?
They came in there with knives and rods and completely disassembled all of our tents, cut and shredded everything, threw it in major piles, regardless if it was fragile. Everything was completely by force, and they just went in there and destroyed everything.
So everything is taken out of Zuccotti Park. What does this do to you in the meantime? Do you regather, regroup, try and find another place?
Yes, we have a few GA meetings that are going on right now blocks away in multiple directions to find out what kind of direct action is going to be taken. There are people from Harlem, people from Brooklyn, and people from Queens that are storming on their way down here to Lower Manhattan to find out what our next step is going to be.
What does this mean, Chris, for the movement in the long term?
This means that, you're going to have to take a few licks if you want to stand up for what you believe in. They're not chasing me away right now.
Chris Porter from near Zuccotti Park in Lower Manhattan. Chris, thank you.
Thank you.
Well, now to some other news. The Commerce Department said this morning retail sales jumped 0.5% last month. That's a good sign for the retail sector as we head into the biggest shopping day of the year next Friday. For more, let's bring in Julie Niemann, analyst with Smithmore & Company. She's with us from St. Louis, as she is every Tuesday. Good morning.
Morning, Jeremy.
So, Julie, does this retail sales number tell you the economy domestically is getting better?
Well, no one's going crazy, but retailers try to get Christmas going right after the back-to-school sales in September. This is not just a rise in prices, but there has been some real buying. Largely, it's been internet purchases, appliances, they're replacing and upgrading. Black Friday is going to be very serious this year. You're not going to see much work being done in offices simply because you're going to have online shopping all day. Free shipping or nominal shipping for almost everybody, that's the big buzz. In fact, some big retailers are opening Thursday night for the turkey burp sales.
Well, it's interesting that you mentioned free shipping, Julie, because I think that sort of encapsulates the state of the American consumer right now. We've got the people basically want to feel like they're getting a really good deal, but paying really very low prices. Is that the way that the consumer is right now and will be for some time?
Well, it's all because of electronics. You're shopping with your smartphone in-store and online. It's the retail world versus Amazon. Everybody compares it to the low price of Amazon. So you're going to have very competitive pricing, coupons. Macy's and Target just added a ShopKick. That's an application kicking in. Gives you points for deals, delivers home rewards, kick bucks, you name it. Exclusive offers in the store. Nordstrom says full Wi-Fi. And who are they targeting? It's the 18 to 35 crowd. These are sincere shoppers. They're amazing bargain shoppers. Groupon, coupons, big deals. No embarrassment about getting more better for less with that group.
Julie Niemann of Smithmore & Company, thanks as always.
You bet.
And you can check out the numbers, of course, and all kinds of stuff. The podcast, subscribe to the podcast at our all-new marketplace.org.
The all-new marketplace.org, which is the hub of business and economic news for the World Wide Web. And now it's just got a lot of new features. And
Completely redesigned. Yeah.
They've been working on it for months here at the Marketplace. Web staff have been working on it for months.
Web Central here. We got Web a sneak Central. Peek last week. We only saw it for the first time last week.
We just saw it. But it's really very easy to navigate. It's got a lot of new features on it, and it's just something that you ought to check out, marketplace.org.
Looking for a good read? Visit the Big Book blog at marketplace.org. Listen to author interviews and read excerpts from the Marketplace bookshelf online at marketplace.org/thebigbook.
Now to the Marketplace global perspective. We've seen time and time again over the past several months what an impact the credit rating agencies can have. When S&P or Moody's downgrades a bank or a country, things can spiral out of control fast. Well, today, the European Union took steps to reduce the influence of those rating agencies, as Marketplace's Stephen Beard reports from London.
The Commission feels the world is too dependent on just three big credit rating agencies. It aims to regulate them and promote competition. The Commission also wants to tackle the apparent conflict of interest, with agencies being paid by the companies they're rating. But it's in the field of government debt that the Commission is making its most controversial proposal. It wants to be able to ban the rating agencies from downgrading European countries when financial markets are in turmoil. Daniel Gross is with the Centre for European Policy Studies in Brussels. He says such a ban would be pointless.
We know that in Europe, the creditworthiness of almost all governments is going down because they have large deficits, high debts, and scant growth prospects. No point in shooting the messenger who tells that to the wider investor community.
He says there have been similar calls in the US for a crackdown on the rating agencies, but they have so far been rejected as impractical. In London, I'm Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
Defense Secretary Leon Panetta and other top military leaders will appear in front of a Senate panel today.
Yeah, they'll be facing questions, Steve, about how the military could survive big cuts from Congress that could come if the so-called super committee doesn't reach a budget deal. Some in the defense industry are already preparing for the worst, as Marketplace's Jeff Tyler reports.
The Defense Department is already committed to cut spending by $350 billion over the next 10 years. If it's forced to slash $1 trillion more, it will need to scrap more than equipment.
Just killing a weapon system or two or three or 10 isn't going to get you there.
Aerospace analyst Wolfgang Demisch says most money is spent on workers. To reduce those costs,
that means major cuts in jobs,
Defense powerhouse Boeing has not mentioned job cuts. It says demand from international markets could help offset reduced demand at home. But industry consultant Scott Hamilton with Lehman Company has doubts.
The international markets combined are smaller than the U.S. market.
International competition is getting more intense. Consider the air show in Dubai this week. Boeing did just nail down an $18 billion deal for passenger planes, but Hamilton says Arab nations in the market for new fighter jets are soliciting bids from Europe. I'm Jeff Tyler for Marketplace.
Well, Defense Secretary Panetta will also be answering questions today about troop withdrawals from Iraq by the end of the year. Well, you know, as troops leave, American officials hope the free market will continue to take hold in Baghdad and Kirkuk and other cities all across Iraq. Well, Lionel Johnson is with the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, which is hosting the leaders of the Iraq Stock Exchange today in Washington, and he's with us now. Lionel Johnson, good morning.
Hello. How are you?
I'm doing well. You've been traveling for thousands of miles there with the Occupy protests. What's going on right now in New York?
What's going on right now is the cops are cleaning out and clearing out Zuccotti Park about an hour ago. They forcefully came in there and completely destroyed our camp, our kitchen, everything is completely wiped out.
What do you mean destroyed? What did they do?
They came in there with knives and rods and completely disassembled all of our tents, cut and shredded everything, threw it in major piles, regardless if it was fragile. Everything was completely by force, and they just went in there and destroyed everything.
So everything is taken out of Zuccotti Park. What does this do to you in the meantime? Do you regather, regroup, try and find another place?
Yes, we have a few GA meetings that are going on right now blocks away in multiple directions to find out what kind of direct action is going to be taken. There are people from Harlem, people from Brooklyn, and people from Queens that are storming on their way down here to Lower Manhattan to find out what our next step is going to be.
What does this mean, Chris, for the movement in the long term?
This means that, you're going to have to take a few licks if you want to stand up for what you believe in. They're not chasing me away right now.
Chris Porter from near Zuccotti Park in Lower Manhattan. Chris, thank you.
Thank you.
Now to Flint, Michigan, which Steve, of course, has famously and historically seen good economic times, but in the past few decades, it's really been bad economic times in Flint. Well, now Flint is getting something that some European countries have gotten in the midst of their financial crises: technocrats, those experts who get installed to take over in places whose finances are a mess. Michigan Radio's Jennifer Guerra reports.
Flint, the birthplace of General Motors, is seeing red, literally. The city is at least $7 million in debt. Michigan's governor has declared a financial emergency and will likely appoint an emergency manager to run the city. Flint would join a growing number of Michigan cities whose elected officials are being replaced by financial fixers, those who can come in and make tough decisions without any worry of political fallout. Flint City Councilman Joshua Freeman is kind of eager to see that happen.
Services are going to be cut. But, you know, you've only got so much money to work with, and you either work within those dollars or you cease to exist.
But Flint resident Andrew Morton says he's not sure how many more austerity measures the city can handle.
We're so used to living on a very tight budget, and the idea of people coming in and taking more away from a community that's already lost so much, things are pretty tough already.
It would be the second time Flint has come under the purview of an emergency manager. This time, though, the manager would have more power to cut services and amend contracts. I'm Jennifer Guerra for Marketplace.
All right, from Flint, Michigan to New York City, where some residents whose homes are just a stone's throw away from Times Square, Jeremy, are complaining about a new electronic billboard that's gone up. This is a 6,000-square-foot digital TV.
Well,
my guess, that's like three times the size of my house.
Yeah,
you know?
Well, it's probably in Times Square. Might be a small
6,000-square-foot digital TV screen on the city's Port Authority building. And those flashes seem to shine right into the living room of one woman who says the light keeps her awake and her cats on edge. She and her neighbors are trying to convince the authority to dim the lights at night or even shut the sign off after dark. Just turn it off completely after a certain hour. Or, of course, face the prospect of leaving the peace and tranquility of Times Square.
Yeah, really. It sounds like she's living in the wrong place. I mean, not an argument you can win. President Obama arrives in Australia tomorrow for a two-day visit, and the big news down under is a law that was just approved to tax greenhouse gas emissions. That's something President Obama has supported in the past for the United States, although he hasn't been able to get it through Congress. Stuart Cohen reports from Sydney on what the new tax will mean for Australia.
Hi. Hello. Hi. Are you going to go to have a bath,
Teddy? Charmaine Williams and Pascal Scherer are, in many ways, a typical Australian family. Recent homebuyers, they have a 2-year-old son with plans for another child on the way soon. And the new carbon tax makes sense to them.
I think if you could call it something like a pollution tax, because that's what it is, it's basically taxing the big polluters.
Who is going to disagree? Everybody wants pollution reduced.
Only the country's 500 most polluting companies will be hit with the tax, about $23 per metric ton of greenhouse gas emissions. But it's expected to raise the cost of a lot of things, from electricity to a loaf of bread. Much of the money collected will go to consumers to compensate for higher prices. The government says families like the Williams-Scherers will actually get more in compensation from the tax than they'll pay in higher prices. But the impact on businesses is less clear.
For businesses, it really depends on the sector and how they play the game.
John Judson runs Energetics, a company that advises businesses on going green. He says the key point he's telling clients is not to think, how much is the carbon tax going to cost me, but what opportunities are there to profit from it?
It's not just obvious things like people who make equipment that is lower carbon or provide services that are lower carbon, but it's also traditional businesses just seeing they've got a real opportunity. So, for example, if you happen to be in the telecommunications industry, the low-carbon future depends on fantastic communications.
Do I get a kiss?
No!
No! Good night, beautiful boy.
For Charmaine Williams and Pascal Scherer, the increased costs from the carbon tax seem manageable. For them, it's more important to set a good example, even when it comes to their son Caleb's bedtime stories.
I collect all my papers and put them in the recycling bin. Then they can be used again. Do you do this?
In Sydney, I'm Stuart Cohen for Marketplace.
So, Jeremy, the NBA lockout saga continues today, right?
Indeed, it does. It looks like the players are ready to take things to court now after negotiations have failed yet again. Collective bargaining has broken down, and it looks like the season really might not happen at all now, Steve.
Well, today in our Midday Extra, we ask, what's going to happen to the NBA and its players? And here to talk with us about that is Henry Abbott. He's writer of the True Hoop blog for ESPN. Henry, how you doing?
I'm doing all right, thank you.
I know the NBA discussions look like they're pretty much in chaos right now, and you've been following the story from the get-go. Do you expect the NBA to play any games this season?
Believe it or not, I do. The reason being that the leaders of both groups have telegraphed various signs that they really do want a deal. The negotiations broke down at a ridiculous point where they've actually agreed on the money. Essentially, both sides say they would play for half of all of basketball-related income if they get the, quote, systems issues that they want. The systems issues they're fighting over are really tiny things, like nothing to lose a season over. So you say, why are we at this dire stage? And I think it's because the leaders of both groups, who I think would happily compromise on the systems issues, have to kowtow to hardliners, real hardliners in each camp. These are owners in small markets who have been losing money and are very bitter, or agents and some superstar players in the case of the union who really want, don't want to be pushed around by the owners. So in kowtowing to those hardliners, things have appeared very ugly. The rhetoric has gotten very ugly, but the fact is the deal is close.
But don't they see the big picture here, which is that the longer this goes on and the season doesn't happen, they are really alienating fans?
Yeah, that's a big factor. If everybody has a lot to lose, right? Let's say we put a dollar value on alienating fans. Maybe it costs them, $500 million a month. I'm just making up a number. The season itself is worth more than $5 billion to the league. And the players get about $2 billion a year in lost salary. So there's just tons of money being lost everywhere, not to mention the cost of paying superstar lawyers like Jeffrey Kessler and David Boies for the players. So, there's just so much to be lost, and it's incalculable how much it is. But nevertheless, there are owners who say they'd rather not play this season until they get a system that really makes them feel like they can compete. And there are players who've made so much in some cases, or agents, who would like to be able to continue to make more for decades, who are just willing to say, look, we'll sit tight until we get this the way we want it.
And so where do we go from here, Henry?
Quite honestly, I think everything that's happened, David Stern's ultimatums and the players' big legal action, I think it's all just designed to continue talks while shifting the leverage in those talks. I think both sides want to talk again, and at some point soon, the union will call the league and say, hey, you know, now that we've got this little bit of extra leverage, let's talk some more.
It sounds like they're taking their negotiating tactics from Capitol Hill in Washington, where you just sort of talk and talk and talk forever, hard line, never actually compromise on anything.
Isn't it amazing? It's like it's so different from covering sports. You know, now like really all I do with my life is sit around hotel lobbies in New York and have people sit under lights and say disappointing things day after day after day.
Must be very demoralizing.
You should come to the radio business, my friend.
It's not inspiring, I'll tell you that much.
Henry Abbott, blogger for True Hoop. That's on ESPN's website. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Henry.
Thank you for having me.
Well, speaking of the NBA, Steve, you know, some of the players have come up with some interesting ways to occupy their time now that they can't play.
Yeah.
And these things have nothing to do with basketball.
According
to the Wall Street Journal, Carmelo Anthony of the New York Knicks has been doing some acting on Law & Order SVU and Nurse Jackie.
Oh, that's nice. All
Michael Beasley of the Minnesota Timberwolves has taken up ballet.
Nice.
Yeah, that's
very
what
nice.
He's
Well, you know,
he's
that can help on the court, though. That's
maybe,
something
yeah.
that, you know, you need to dance on the court,
right? You got
to
plie when you're going
that's
across
right. I don't even know what that is, but okay, that's
and
fun.
And Drew Gooden of the Milwaukee Bucks is scouting locations for a chicken wings franchise, which aims to take chicken wings to a whole new level.
I wonder what level that is. Maybe that'll be a slam dunk for him.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. Although, you know, I think business is probably going to be down in the chicken wing industry if there are no NBA games to watch. In Los Angeles, I'm Jeremy Hobson.
And I'm Steve Chiatakis. Thick in the paint here at Marketplace.org. Thanks for being with us. This is the Marketplace Midday Update.
This is APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.